Welcome to Not Terrible.
I'm Jess Hooker.
And I'm Mary Graham. This is episode 3 of the Not Terrible podcast. Today we're talking about highly sensitive persons. Highly sensitive persons have finely tuned nervous systems that help them be acutely aware of physical and emotional stimulation. Researchers estimate 20% of the population is highly sensitive, and in this episode we'll talk about safeguarding ourselves from the negatives and embracing the positives of being a highly sensitive person. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist. So I've been going to my counselor for about a year when we had enough space to talk about something other than addiction in my marriage and like the devastation of a lot of things. And I was describing a situation and the way it was making me feel, and just like the memories of past situations that were similar and how physical I felt them. And it like made me physically ill to talk about them or to be around this situation. And my counselor said, "Have we ever talked about you being a highly sensitive person?" And I was like, "No. Also, I'm not sure exactly what that is." Mm-hmm. And she said, "Okay, well, hold on. Let me ask you these questions." So she went through some questions, and we can talk more about those in a minute. And at the end, she was like, "Oh, yeah, we've been so consumed with dealing with your marriage and this addiction situation and the grief and all the stuff that comes with that, that there's a lot of things we haven't talked about, and you're definitely a highly sensitive person." Can you tell me what that means? Like, since you've known about this longer than me, like, what is a highly sensitive person?
So I did the opposite. When I started going to therapy, it was because I needed new coping. Like, I walked in there saying, that's what
yes.
I needed. Yeah. That I needed new coping mechanisms, new techniques just to deal with life. And so we did a number of, like, evaluations. Because that's why I was there.
Get to know you, what are you doing? Yeah.
So the highly sensitive thing played in quickly because we also discussed the Enneagram and how I was a 2 and that these things kind of go hand in hand, mm-hmm. my number and this. But being highly sensitive is how, I didn't even consider a definition. So
I can answer my own question. Thank you, Mary. You're welcome. So highly sensitive can be defined as acute physical, mental, or emotional responses to external, so social or environmental, or internal intrapersonal stimuli. A highly sensitive person may be an introvert, an extrovert, or somewhere in between. So it's not specific for a certain type of person. Anybody, extrovert or introvert, can be highly sensitive.
Right, but you can't be a little bit highly sensitive. Either you are or you aren't.
Yeah, you're either in or out.
Yeah, yeah. That's not like, oh, well, if you think that I'm highly sensitive to this, well, then maybe that's a pet peeve or mm-hmm. something that just sets you off or irritates you. That doesn't make you highly sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Highly sensitive is, I feel like it affects everything
all parts of your life. Yeah.
For me. Yeah.
So the lady that kind of has been doing the research about highly sensitive people and being a highly sensitive person from the early 90s is Elaine Aron. And she says in her research that about 15 to 20% of the population is considered highly sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's too many to be considered disorder. So it's not like we think of disorder as something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something wrong with you. It's just a different way that you process and handle your emotions.
Right. It's also how you view, it is process and handle, but I don't know if it, I know that for me, a lot of my high sensitivity, and maybe this is how I manage it, is when I get invited somewhere or I have to interact with people or I know a restaurant I'm going to and I know it's very loud, like the things that I have to do to gear up and prepare for those situations,
mm-hmm.
that's actually what affects me the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily the downtime afterwards, which a lot of people are that way. They need to decompress after they've been stimulated that way. Mine is gearing up prior to and, like, But I guess it's because I've always been this way and knew that I was this
way. You figured out how to cope.
Yeah, I just didn't know there was a word for it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and what's interesting is I can put a lot of labels on my personality, and one of them is introvert. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the things, once I started working with my therapist and kind of digging into a little more about what a highly sensitive person is, a lot of them overlap with introversion mm-hmm. for me. A lot of them, and we, in a couple episodes, we're going to talk more about the Enneagram. We still hope you're reading that book, The Road Back to You. We're coming back to it, I promise. A lot of my type in the Enneagram, I could match up a lot of the definitions to highly sensitive person to other parts of my other characteristics or other mm-hmm. labels.
Sure.
So that there was an actual name for all the things together. Mm-hmm. I just missed that. The researcher, Elaine Aaron, she says that being a highly sensitive person, it's innate. Biologists have found an over 100 species from fruit flies and birds and fish to dogs, cats, and horses that all can have this characteristic. The brains of a highly sensitive person actually work a little different than other people's brains. We are more aware of subtleties. So this is mainly because your brain processes information and reflects on it more deeply. So if you wear glasses, for example, you see more than others by noticing them more. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a way of your brain kind of working. Highly sensitive people are more easily overwhelmed. And this trait is not a new discovery, but it's often been misunderstood.
Yes.
So I think we can also, a lot of the research just refers to a highly sensitive person as a HSP.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times maybe somebody would be called shy when they're highly sensitive.
Yes. And so when you said that this is innate, and I guess as aware as we are in mental health and keeping our children healthy and safe and being aware of their needs, we were both pretty shocked that we were in our 30s and had never heard of this.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that right now, in terms of research, everything is your environment. They're not really spending a lot of time on the innate. They're spending time on, mm-hmm. okay, well, what traumas happened to you?
What has shaped you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's why we're not hearing about it as much. And I think that also people, when you say highly sensitive, we know that there are other things like autism and Asperger's and people even say ADD or ADHD that get lumped in there. This is not that. This is very different from that. Yes, do they have overlapping
qualities?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but they're not the same.
So I thought it would be interesting. So my therapist, when we were kind of going through, like, when she got that first little inkling.
I know what that look looks like on her face.
And she's like, oh, hey, hold on a second. Let's look at this. So I'm going to read, and we will link to this in the show notes. It's hsperson.com. So mm-hmm. highlysensitiveperson.com, hsperson. And this lady is like the thought of as the in the forefront of this.
Yeah.
We have a lot of books that this has been her life's work.
I think we have five and three of them are by her. Yeah.
So she's the go-to. Mm-hmm. But here are the questions that our therapist asked. I say us, but not together. Just another reminder, Jess and I do not go to therapy together. We just have the same therapist.
Yes.
Okay. So all it is you say yes if it's true. It's just basically like true and false. So
okay.
I am easily overwhelmed by strong sensory input. I seem to be aware of subtleties in my environment. Other people's moods affect me. I tend to be very sensitive to pain. I find myself needing to withdraw during busy days into bed or into a darkened room or any place where I can have some privacy and relief from stimulation. I am particularly sensitive to the effects of caffeine. I just thought about you on that. Like, you're crazy with the caffeine.
I have to be very, very mindful, because if I just had caffeine from I don't usually get it from stores anymore, like commercial places, because it's so loaded
yeah.
that it was,
You needed control.
I was terrified. I was terrified at how like at how out of control I felt. Oh.
And that's not for me. That is not true. Like caffeine doesn't affect me like that. But you, yeah, like your hands shake. Like I am very aware when you've had too much caffeine. Okay, sorry, I got distracted. I am easily overwhelmed by things like bright light, strong smells, coarse fabrics, or sirens close by. I have a rich, complex inner life. I am made uncomfortable by loud noises. I am deeply moved by arts or music. My nervous system sometimes feels so frazzled that I just have to go off by myself. I am conscientious. Did I say that right? I startle easily. I get rattled when I have a lot to do in a short amount of time. When people are uncomfortable in a physical environment, I tend to know what needs to be done to make it more comfortable, like changing the lighting or seating. I am annoyed when people try to get me to do too many things at once. I do that to Jess sometimes. I try hard to avoid making mistakes or forgetting things. I make a point to avoid violent movies and TV shows. I become unpleasantly aroused when a lot is going on around me. Sorry, that made me laugh. Being very hungry creates a strong reaction in me, disrupting my concentration or mood. We call that hangry. Changes in my life shake me up. I notice and enjoy delicate or fine scents, tastes, sounds, works of art. I find it unpleasant to have a lot going on at once. I make it a high priority to arrange my life to avoid upsetting or overwhelming situations. I am bothered by intense stimuli like loud noises or chaotic scenes. Two more. When I must complete or I must compete or be observed while performing a task, I become so nervous or shaky that I do much worse than I would otherwise. And then when I was a child, my parents or teachers seemed to see me as sensitive or shy. Mm-hmm. So there are 27 questions total. Mm-hmm. And anything above 14 rates you as highly sensitive person.
Yeah. There's a similar questionnaire there's 23 questions for the highly sensitive child. And it's interesting because I had read this before and hearing what you said and putting it in childlike terms, like the complaints about scratchy clothing or the seams in their socks, things like that. Startles easily. That was one that you said. Learns better from gentle correction than strong punishment.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a handful that it was like, man, and just being aware, they're very intuitive usually and have a clever sense of humor, usually a little bit
mm-hmm.
higher than their physical age. They're perfectionists. Children that are perfectionists are often, because I know you and I have had this conversation mm-hmm. about highly sensitive kids. My kids, because when I think of highly sensitive, sometimes I loop it into my Enneagram number in terms of being very sensitive to people's words, like mm-hmm. how affected I am, even by body language and knowing that someone maybe isn't a fan of me or just outwardly says, I don't like you. which happens more often than you realize.
Yeah.
And my kids are completely unfazed by other people's opinions. And I'm just like, oh, I would do anything to be that. I don't know. I don't even know if it's a confidence.
Yeah.
But because when I first heard about highly sensitive, I was like, no, my kids are completely, no, they're not sensitive.
They're tough.
They're tough. But when I go through and read some of these things, I'm like, wow. They actually are, especially they're both very, very aware. Their empathy level is off the charts. And sometimes I'm like, oh, my gosh, we got to talk about boundaries, you guys. We got to talk about energy boundaries here. And I know that you think one of your kids is.
Yeah, so when with my therapist, when we started talking through that, she said, well, here – like just to be aware, this is not a learned behavior. This is genetics. So if you are highly sensitive, one of your parents mm-hmm. is highly sensitive. And that
means, you know which parent that is?
I think I do. Yeah. And then there's a good chance at least one of your children is. So this mm-hmm. is something that like it's a family generational thing. So kind of looking through the lens of highly sensitive person, mm-hmm. I can see which parent is highly sensitive. Knowing that when I was a kid, so I remember like you know, when your mom would come and scratch your back, mm-hmm. or like you'd be sitting on the couch and your mom would like rub your arm or something. Mm-hmm. I wanted to enjoy it, mm-hmm. but it always felt like my mom was rubbing my skin off, and she wasn't being rough yeah. or like anything. But like if she, you know, are watching TV and your mom's rubbing your back, and then mm-hmm. like she gets distracted, so she just rubs the same spot the whole time, and you're just like, Ruth, wait, pay attention to my back. But like, it made me crawl out of my skin when she would rub the same wow. spot over and over again. It felt yeah. like she was rubbing my skin off when she was just mm-hmm. like, you know, so reading that list and being aware that like, oh man, that probably for her, it didn't feel different. Mm-hmm. Somebody else could have their back rubbed or like be in the same spot and it didn't bother them.
Sure.
But knowing now that I'm a highly sensitive person, like no wonder I felt like I was crawling out of my mm-hmm. skin when she was rubbing me like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, like it makes so many things make
just
sense
little
now.
Things, yeah.
Yeah.
But you were aware of it, but how
I
would
didn't
you ever
know why.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and so as an educator, then I'm learning in college, like learning all these like different styles of learning or learning what maybe different labels kids can mm-hmm. have. And like some of the things I was learning, I was like, wow, am I autistic? Like
right,
what?
Right.
Like these, there's so many things that overlap mm-hmm. that I don't have a filter. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm autistic. Mm-hmm. No, you're not. No, I'm not autistic.
Right.
Like, but like you see all these things, and if we're not fully aware of all the options, sometimes they're mislabeled or they're mm-hmm. looked at in a way that maybe hurts instead of helps the person.
Right. Yeah.
So I can see now that I might be raising two highly sensitive children.
Mm-hmm.
I know one for sure. And we talk about this in a little bit when we go back to the Enneagram, like labeling anything at this age, my kids are 7 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tricky like mm-hmm. path to go through to start labeling a child at this age, because
yeah.
sometimes we pick up labels
and then we decide that's what we are.
Yeah, yeah. And they're not what we are, mm-hmm. or they shape us in a way that
yeah.
maybe wouldn't otherwise. So I'm careful
right.
to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I am also aware that I think at least one of my daughters is.
Yeah. And my kids being a little bit older, 13 and 15, I'm giving them the information. I'm not saying this is what I think you are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, hey, I took this quiz and I think maybe you should take it. Or, hey, take this quiz. This is kind of fun to realize. And actually teaching them coping mechanisms, like with the Enneagram, Max saying, oh, I'm this number, and knowing, yeah, your dad's that and I'm this. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the highly sensitive and them going, oh, yeah, that does. I do feel that way. Or, I mean, when that said seams of socks, I was like, that's it. They're both highly sensitive.
Yeah.
They've been like that since they were like freaks about it. Freaks.
Put your shoe on and the sock is twisted in
yeah,
a little bit.
And then
they lose their minds.
Yeah, and the heel isn't where it's supposed to be. And if the heel is hanging, and I was just like, oh my gosh.
And my kids yes. both, and I know this is partly just like especially when they're little, just
yeah.
like toddler chaos,
mm-hmm.
but like a shirt that feels funny, or like you buy something and you think it looks cute, and then like they hate it because of the way it feels, or the way Harper has a lot of like the dresses that have like the seam kind of underneath
oh,
where
yeah.
her chest is,
mm-hmm.
that, and then like baby doll style.
Yeah.
And if it's too tight, she loses her mind.
Yeah.
And we have so many cute dresses that she won't wear because there's like even if it's just a hint of a
yeah.
seam, she won't wear it.
That's so, yeah.
I'm like, no, you need to wear that shirt.
I know. We've had cry fights
yeah.
about like, no, you're wearing this. I bought this and it looks cute.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with Addie too. Her being where she is intellectually, sometimes she can't verbalize. Like, she just knows, like, I don't want this.
Yeah.
But she can't tell me why. And I think she's just being stubborn. And
I'm like, oh, well, maybe.
Yes. So, yeah, there's benefits. We really could do an entire episode about the highly sensitive child. There's
mm-hmm.
so much information. And just seeing how much it would probably benefit a lot of people. And like I said, probably put out a lot of fires before they start if you were aware, you know.
It just offers, so me being aware of another part of my personality or another way that I am made helps me interact in my world better.
Mm-hmm.
So then if I know a little bit more about my children, and not just that you're not listening when I tell you to do something, but I can see through this lens of maybe this is the way your brain is working too, like it helps me love them better. It helps mm-hmm. maybe me give them words when they don't know the right words yet because they're
right.
7 and 9.
Yeah.
I think it's also really interesting if maybe your spouse is a highly sensitive person and you're not, to even be able to understand where they're coming from.
I know. Even to say, like, to talk to you about it is fine because you're aware of it. But when you bring it up to somebody, they immediately are like, yeah, you cried all the time as a kid. You cry all the time now, you know. And I was like, actually, it's not just that.
Right.
Yeah. So that would actually just be sensitive, yes. Not highly sensitive.
Well, I like Glennon Doyle, yeah. on Instagram. She shares often in her writing too, like, when someone says, like, why do you cry all the time? Or, like, why are you so sensitive? She says, it's because I'm paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I cry when I'm happy. I cry when I'm sad. Like, mm-hmm. because I'm paying attention.
Yeah.
My eyes are taking it all in. Mm-hmm. My heart is moved. Mm-hmm. And I'm showing you how I feel with my tears. And I grew up not ever wanting to cry. Like, I didn't want people to see me cry.
Right.
I felt like it was a weakness. And I feel like now as an adult, I'm just making up for all the times that I made myself not cry. Like,
those tears are going to come out eventually.
Yeah. That when I was 13 and I didn't cry that one time at basketball practice, that's why I'm crying right now.
Yeah.
And I'm 36 now.
Yeah. Those things resurface.
Yeah.
And talking about, it feels like there's so many downsides of being highly sensitive. It was actually hard to find something good about it. In terms of how does this benefit you? Like I said, you're very aware of other people's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's never a bad thing.
Nope.
You know, I was reading, and this is actually in The Highly Sensitive Child, that you're aware of potential dangers before anybody. Like when you're highly sensitive, you kind of scan you scan people, you scan the area, just you're a lot more aware of what's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
And your ability to think into the future and go, okay, if we do this, these are the things that could happen. And being mindful of those things, that's beneficial if you're with non-highly sensitive people who react quickly. So mm-hmm. if you can do the work ahead of time and then send them into the burning building.
Right.
You know, that makes for a good team.
Mm-hmm.
Because when, like, I don't react quickly. Like, I need to know what's going on. I need to have all the details. And
yeah.
then we'll decide what we're going to do. Yeah.
And that's actually, like, the opposite for me. Like, I react very quickly to things. But I'm also,
but I feel like your brain works really fast.
I don't know what it is. Like, that dynamic of, like, I have already thought about all the outcomes,
right.
but I also think very fast.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
I don't know how those two fit together.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, there is a part of my brain, like, it never stops. So, yes, I've already thought about these 15 things, mm-hmm. but I didn't even maybe know I was thinking about those
right.
15 things.
Right.
And I already have a response to them.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Huh. But it was also discussing that the sad part is that usually highly sensitive people have been in really helpful jobs as attorneys or counselors and nurses and doctors. Like, that's been the case. And even back in the day, they would most likely be the teacher
mm-hmm.
or the preacher or, you know, I'm going to say back in Western time. That's what I was going to
say. The old West.
The old West. The school marm was a highly sensitive person.
School marm.
But no, the sad thing is now is that we are now in a society that devalues that.
Right.
You have to be aggressive. You have to be fast. And no one appreciates cautious
decision making. We don't need your
emotions.
We do not need your emotions.
Yeah, no. Like, you have to react from the gut quickly and not consider people's feelings. Like, that our society doesn't value this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are like, oh, well, even if they are highly sensitive, they're like, no, I'm just going to be loud.
Right. Yeah.
And then
so
people
that's,
will pay attention to me.
Right. Even if I'm not saying anything of value, I'm going to be loud because mm-hmm. it drowns out what I really think.
Insecurities.
Yeah. And that's what, the researcher, Dr. Aaron, says that sensitivity is valued differently in different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
In cultures where it is not valued, so I would say America, highly sensitive persons tend to have low self-esteem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they're told, don't be so sensitive. So they feel abnormal because people are reacting to their emotions. And emotions make a lot of people feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So you're told to shut that down very quickly. I thought this was interesting. So researchers have inferred that Albert Einstein, Martin Luther King Jr., and Steve Jobs were all highly sensitive persons.
Yeah. And like, for me, that makes a lot of sense because mm-hmm. they're a lot like us.
Yeah. I'm very, very similar to Albert Einstein. We often get confused for each other. What's interesting, so one of the things that I talk to my therapist, Lisa, about after this all kind of came out is, so when I started over a year ago writing about what was going on in my marriage with addiction, mm-hmm. when you share hard things on the internet, people connect to that and then they want to talk to you about it, which yep. I'm not complaining about this at all.
Now we're going to engage.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the emails, the comments, the private messages I received of people sharing their story mm-hmm. with me. I love hearing from people that connect or like that found some kind of solace or value in what I was sharing. Mm-hmm. But what I struggled with is if someone shared a hard story with me, I took it on and like internalized right. it. Mm-hmm. I carried it with me. There were days I couldn't open my email because if somebody was going to tell me a bad story, it would wreck me. It yeah. would wreck me for them mm-hmm. and it would wreck me all over again when I connected it back to my story. Mm-hmm. So Lisa and I talked about like for her as a counselor, there are things you have to do where you sit with somebody and they tell you hard things and then you have to let them go. Mm-hmm. You cannot make them your own. For me, I was drowning in my own marriage and trying to make things like trying to take care of my kids and all these things. And people were sharing their stories with me and not trying to hurt me at all. Like,
no.
But it was pulling me further and further down because I couldn't get out of I couldn't see my way out of any of their stories either. Like yeah. I just carried their weight as if it were my own. And she said, that's what a highly sensitive person does who doesn't, mm-hmm. isn't maybe aware that they need the boundaries or aware of what they're doing or how their brain is working.
Yeah.
So we've started working on like, okay, well maybe there needs to be like maybe somebody else needs to check your email for you and like respond to like first level respond to those things
right.
or like, how can we protect your heart so that you don't like, I would read an email before bed and it would wreck me.
Right.
And I would carry. Mm-hmm. So when I say like, thank you for sharing your story with me, like I carry that with me mm-hmm. then. And it was hard to see my way out of mm-hmm. everyone else's brokenhearted yeah. mess too.
Yeah. Yes. I bet you do this too. There's like if there's something going on and you receive like a text message from somebody and it's like, man, I'm not in a place to open this.
Yeah.
I don't like this, like not necessarily that the person is unsafe, but there might be a situation, they might be sharing information and it's just like, I'm not in a place to receive this, so this is just going to have to wait.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have to wait. Or turning my phone on airplane mode when I know that I have absolutely been overwhelmed and going, I can't receive any information.
Yeah.
Like
and I think
that's
also
like
with
such
the
a
news.
Broad thing. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if I'm struggling, I know I can't watch the news.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as a way to ignore what's going on, mm-hmm. but if I hear something horrible, like, mm-hmm. I will for sure be crying as I'm driving down the road listening to the news because I feel so strongly what those people are feeling in that story, like in a way that cannot be healthy. So like learning now, like, oh, okay, well here's what empathy feels like, but here's also like, you can't take it to guilt or like,
right.
you know, like I would go too far with the feelings that would overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of these books that we have, we will link to these in the show notes about like how to set up some appropriate boundaries so that, yes, I'm more aware, my brain works a little differently, mm-hmm. but here's how I can do that in a healthy way that helps others as opposed to a way that like makes me feel like I'm drowning all the time.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break right now. And after this, we'll come back with some things that you can do in your physical environment that can safeguard you from the negativity of being highly sensitive. Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you by the Front Room Studios. And as you know, this is a location that's very near and dear to Mary and I's heart. It's located 20 minutes east of Indianapolis in New Palestine, Indiana. The Front Room Studio is open to host your next event or gathering. Comfortably accommodating groups of 15 or less, the Front Room Studio is the perfect space for your next wine and canvas night, book club, shower, or holiday party. Perhaps you're in need of a professional space to host a meeting or a workshop. Our cozy conference table seats 10. Our modern vintage decor and natural light lends a unique backdrop to photographers needing space for the day. Visit the Front Room Studio on Facebook to schedule your next event in our affordable, stylish space.
Yeah, so we've been hosting, we're doing a book club every week. We've had people in already using our space, and it's really exciting for us to invite others into a place that we love and let them use it for their own parties or get-togethers.
I think the upside of our space is so many areas that you can, that are co-ops, mm-hmm. That you can come in and use are, it seems so like modern and cold. I know that sounds
an
silly.
Office space.
Yeah, very much an office space. And this is so different. Like if you literally just didn't have a place to hang out and you wanted a place to hang out, you could do that here outside of a thousand other things. But yeah, I come here when I don't want to be around my family. And Mary doesn't charge me anything for it.
Oh, you just haven't received the bill yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's in the mail. A few weeks ago, we had our first, like, I was a part of the first kind of, like, group of women sitting around this table mm-hmm. and doing some work. And Jess wasn't in that day. And I just felt, like, a little tear my eye of just, like, this is what we dreamed about, like, gathering people in this space and learning and growing and talking, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear other people's ideas about how they want to use this space. Check us out on Facebook at Front Room Studio New Palestine, and
tell us your ideas. Hey, welcome back. This is the second half of today's episode. We are talking about highly sensitive persons. We went over what that looks like, maybe some characteristics of that if you are kind of starting to connect some dots. Now we're going to say more about action, like what that looks like. How can we live our highly sensitive selves better? What should we allow? What should we not allow? Like, yeah. How do we do this in a healthy way?
Yeah. So I have a book and it's 100 practical tips for highly sensitive person's home. And these are, you're supposed to administer these over a 20-day period. I don't know how necessary that is, but they're pretty basic. They're pretty basic, like, and I think that this is the case with anything. When anybody asks me, they're like, oh, this doesn't feel well. What do you think I should do? And I always say, drink some water. Like, you're probably dehydrated. Drink some water. And that's actually one of the first things that they say in this. Huh. And if you ask the people that I used to work with in my office, they would always say that, you said you could always tell when I've had too much caffeine. They could always tell when I was dehydrated because the term fussy was used, like, how much water have you had today, Jesse? And I'm like, none. Yeah. And it is. It's just, you really have to live a different life when, like you said, according to touch, things like that. And I think that there are probably still things that affect us and we don't know because we just thought that's who we were.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, no, that bothers me, but that has nothing to do with being highly sensitive. It probably actually does.
Yeah.
Like, I have spent probably since the first iPhone came out, finding an alarm that doesn't make me nuts when it goes off. That's something that really, really bothers me. Like the tone, noises, hearing things, frequencies, and maybe because I wear headphones a lot, and I don't know if that has affected. I only have 30% of my hearing in one ear too. So like noise and stuff, yeah. That really bothers me.
Just in you saying that, like sometimes, and I know this is a very common thing because I see memes on it all the time, but like when I hear someone chew their food, I can't describe the rage that is inside of me. Mm-hmm. And especially my husband, like he makes the most horrible sounds with his mouth. He does it in his sleep. Mm. Like, and I've always just thought like, Mary, chill out. Like But no, it sounds horrible. And I realize now, like, as a highly sensitive person, yes, it does bother me more than the average person.
Yeah.
Because I'm more aware of everything that's going on. And that little smacking sound you make with your mouth, like, I've said that one day if I ever kill my husband, it will because of his, it will be because of his chewing.
But that is a genetic trait. Like, I did the 23andMe, and it came back that people chewing their food, that noise doesn't bother me.
Really?
Yes, they can measure those things. It was wild, the things that they could measure. It was nuts.
Whenever we eat with our families, you're going to have to sit next to Chris then. Okay. Because I can't even tell you the sounds that come out of that. I'm like, and he chews with his mouth closed. It's like I don't know. I won't talk about it. I'm starting
We'll put Addie and Chris at the same end of the table then. You and Max, because Max loses. Cannot. I was like, he's going to strangle her. Yes, that's what's going to happen.
All right, so what else does your book say?
If you are affected by noise, finding white noise that doesn't bother you is a good way to cover it up. Like, I get really frustrated about the time of day that my neighbors mow their grass, especially if, like, all four of the other neighbors and us were mowing our grass at the same time, because that's kind of just something you do. Like, oh, okay, they're doing it. We can do it. If you have an issue with that, which I do, I use a white noise app on my phone, and I like that. And when I was talking about noise earlier in terms of waking up, they also recommend a light lamp that wakes you up with light as opposed to
noise. Like gradually?
Yes. Have you seen those?
No.
Yeah. It's almost, it just mimics like the sun coming up, and it's a slow, and then it gets brighter and brighter and brighter, and that's how it wakes you up. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a good thing. Temperature, are you affected by temperature in your house? Does it have to be a very specific?
No, I'm okay with temperature. I like it to be cold. Well, I guess maybe.
Unless you can use your fireplace and then you don't like it.
Oh man, I will burn that house down with a good fireplace.
Shoo. Another one I think that I know that this is for me, but tidying up. Like if our house, I have to do a walkthrough in the evening. I have a hard time going to sleep if there are dishes in the sink. There's just,
yeah.
But those, I feel like those are the safeguards so that when I wake up in the morning that I'm not immediately overstimulated by all the things that I have to do.
Right. I'm the same way. A lot of people will come to my house and be like, why is it so clean all the time? I'm like, well, because there are a lot of things chaotic in my life, yeah. And this house cannot be one of them.
Yes, yeah.
And I've had a friend that's like, hey, you need to relax with that, and I think you'd feel better. I'm like, actually, no. Like, if my house is a mess, I feel out of control and, like, chaotic, and I cannot relax.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's with talking with my therapist. She said, you have built in healthy coping mechanisms for so many of the traits that it doesn't necessarily stand out too much because you have over time adapted. Like when it talks about, one of the questions was like being hangry, like that extreme hunger. I have adapted because I always have a snack in my purse. Like I'm never going to get to that level because I know what happens when I'm really hungry and I get mean.
Yeah.
So like you create all these, even without being aware, all these like safety nets to help you survive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I know that also one of mine is when you said, and now I've conditioned my kids to do this and it makes their dad crazy. Like they have to have something to do. Like if we're in the car, if we know we're going somewhere where we're going to be waiting, there's usually a bag, put stuff in mom's bag, and then we have things to do. I don't like to waste time.
No. No.
Wasting time really. Like, if I'm wasting time, I know that I am relaxing because I need to relax.
It's on purpose.
And I will write it. Like, this is what I'm doing. And this is what I'm going to do. Or I look forward to it at that point in the day when I'm going to do it. But even, like, I hate to pump gas. I know that's not a waste of time. I know that I need fuel.
It doesn't feel efficient.
So I will wait and check emails and respond to things while the gas is pumping and I
listen
there.
To podcasts or audiobooks while I'm doing things like that, because I'm always doing one thing is never, I would never just be folding the clothes. I'm going to be listening to something that has to do with work or has to do with some kind of learning while doing something else.
But I also do the opposite in sometimes I need to be in my car and they're, if I get in my car and I'm like, no music, my family loses their minds. They're like, how could you possibly? Because they're the three people that get in the car and want to have a conversation and turn the radio up, and then we have to talk.
Makes me crazy. That's my husband will always have the radio on. I can drive in a silent car, and it doesn't bother me. I have things going on in my head. I'm
working through some stuff.
Yeah, guys, I'm solving some world problems right now.
It's actually really loud in here, okay?
I went on vacation with my parents last fall, and we drove my car, and we were like 3 hours into the trip, and Mom's like, so are we not going to listen to music at all? And I like hadn't even realized people, like there are five people in my car. There was sound. Yeah. My kids are having snacks. Like there was enough going on that we didn't need music and people were talking, and it made my mom uncomfortable to not have music on.
Wow. That's wild.
And nothing makes me more angry than the radio being loud on a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. If I understand you want to have that sound on when mm-hmm. the song is on, but the minute a commercial comes mm-hmm. on, if you don't turn that down, I will punch the radio.
I swear that when I call my mom at her house, I think she stands by the television, turns it up, and then answers the phone. And I was like, do you want me to think that you're like in a nightclub right now or what? What are you doing? Turn the television down.
Are you on a bus?
Yes, it's always so, but I mean, since the beginning of time, since we had like a big wood box television,
mm-hmm.
it's always up so loud, so loud. If that's another thing for the television to be on and no one be watching it.
Nope.
People that sleep with the TV on.
I tried to do that in high school. Our friend Melissa, she slept with the radio on all night. And I was like, well,
really?
Is that what the cool kids do? So like I tried to listen to like WZPL or like whatever, like whatever station I was listening to and like tried to sleep with the radio on
mm-hmm.
for like two nights in a row. And I didn't sleep at all. Mm-hmm. Like it drove me crazy, but I was trying to do something that someone else did because I thought it seemed like the cool thing to do, but no, be quiet. I'm sleeping now and silence is good.
My dad shared a study with us. Like I think I was in middle school and he was like, if you listen to classical music while you're studying, mm-hmm. it can help you retain more information. And so I turned it on, like, whatever that AM station was. And I would listen to it in my sleep. Like, I was like, I'm going to be smarter in the morning.
You got this.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah.
No.
Not necessarily, no. No. But there's, it even goes as far, this, in talking about things that can really send you into stress mode mm-hmm. as a highly sensitive person. Even being aware of like your email subscriptions. Like if you haven't read the last 10 newsletters then unsubscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Says me who has 10,000 unread.
Says me who has it set up so if I haven't opened something in a while, my email automatically says, "Do you want to unsubscribe?" and I click unsubscribe.
Ooh, I need to do that.
There's nothing feels better than unsubscribing to a newsletter for me.
This is a hot button issue with me. Is the video games, and in terms of finding out if your children have or are highly sensitive, and they're playing, like I know Max will play games that involve violence or guns, or because now we're at the point now where it's just like, oh, well, it's not the worst video game, which is whatever, like
it's not the most violent,
right? It's not Call of Duty, and it's not the ones. I don't know what the other one's called, but there's another one that's really intense. I think that they like steal a car and they kill people and there might be prostitution involved. I'm not sure.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But we don't have those two, so it's okay. But I know when Max has been on too long, like you become aggressive and nasty and this is so making him mindful of you have to be aware that this is how you behave.
Yeah.
Do you hear yourself?
And that's also just like, I think
yes.
That boy thing. I watch my niece and nephews on one morning a week, and my sister, when I got there last week, was like, hey, if he wants to watch Netflix, make sure it's something calm because he can't keep attacking his 2-year-old sister and trying to wrestle her. Like, if he's watching something that is too violent or action-filled, he will try to kill the baby. No, not that extreme, but like, it influences their actions mm-hmm. in a very profound way.
Yeah. How are you with smells?
Oh, I have an extreme,
Yep.
I have smells. Extreme reaction to smells.
Yeah.
If you have bad breath, I'm going to need you to. I cannot love you if you have bad breath. I don't care if you're my child.
What if you're Blue?
Blue doesn't. He doesn't have bad breath ever.
Ever?
No.
Really? I thought all dogs had bad breath.
Not my dog.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay.
No, I will. There's times where I'll have.
Or candles?
Yes. Headaches. Mm-hmm. Intense headaches. And I can tell you which brand.
Mm-hmm.
I know all of them. But I cook a lot. So I basically smell like onions and garlic all the time. Mm-hmm. Like my
yeah,
hands.
That's delicious,
and it
though.
Makes, but it makes me nuts when oh. it's on my skin. So I'm like trying to find stainless steel and rub my hands off on it. Mm-hmm. If there's like, I can name a spice by smell, no problem. Like, but it's, there's times where I'm like, do you guys smell something burning? And they're yeah. like, no. And I was like, okay, well, maybe.
Maybe it's my brain. I don't
yeah,
know.
Maybe I'm about to have a stroke. I'm not sure. But it's anything. Like, I'm mm-hmm. always the first one. Like, do you guys smell that?
Yeah.
And then one of the kids laughs. I'm like, ah.
Dang it. No. Yeah, nothing makes me more rage. I have a lot of rage this episode, but like,
yeah.
if I walk through something, if I'm at the store and I walk through a cloud of somebody else's smell, like, I hate everyone in that whole store. Nothing.
That's so
nothing
funny.
Makes me gag faster than walking through a cloud of a present that someone else left at the store
that's
for me.
That's funny. Just a couple other things I'll hit on really fast. Doorbell, that's a big one. Our doorbell, I might put this up on our stories later, but our doorbell is I don't know why. I have no idea why I chose this doorbell other than it looks kind of retro. The noise is awful. It's the mm-hmm. worst possible noise that you, it's, oh, it's so terrible. And people hear it when you do, and then they're like, oh, and then they hit
they
it
do
again.
Do it again.
Stop it.
No.
Yeah. Another thing, anti-slam pads. Like we have, like on our toilet seats, we have those so mm-hmm. that they
slow.
And in our kitchen, just because that is, mm-hmm. that's an intense, I think all of them like come that way
yeah.
probably anymore. But the big thing is, in this book, more than anything, is like setting up a routine. Like we were just talking about the things we do before bed. And I'm sure that I do things when I wake up. And I mean, I know my life is a routine sometimes when it's not absolutely out of control. But that setting up a routine is basically the first way that you start weeding out the things and acknowledging the things that may trigger stress related to your high sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. And I will link to this in the show notes. There is an article that I really found helpful. It's called 10 Life-Changing Tips for Highly Sensitive People about like things to do that help you, especially if you've been told any of these characteristics are negative, to
right.
kind of help spin those back into,
that's
well,
good.
There's a reason I was made like this and there's nothing wrong with that. So like how you can make it a positive in your life and how to set yourself up to be a healthy version of a healthy version of a highly sensitive person, as opposed to like a victim of it, or you know, like the constantly negative Nelly.
Yeah,
of
or
that.
I mean, and there's extreme cases where people will just become hermits.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to leave their house because they're overstimulated, and I think that happens a lot more with children. They're like, they don't want to leave. Like they, and kids should be doing.
And they don't have the coping mechanisms
yeah.
to understand kind of why they feel this way or
mm-hmm.
what they can do to not feel
right.
a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, and the last thing on the list that I'll link to is stop smothering your sensitivity.
Oh, okay.
And I think for highly sensitive people, especially in the culture we grew up in,
mm-hmm.
it is not looked at as a benefit or a
no.
positive thing. And so to say, like, kind of be self-accepting to say, this is how I'm made. There's nothing wrong with me. And the world actually needs this.
Yes.
And to not try to push down or not be so sensitive. Obviously there's a time and a place and you can be overly sensitive. I think we all are at some point,
mm-hmm.
but just being self-aware and also seeing this as a positive and not a negative is a really good place to start. Because if we're both highly sensitive people, it must be pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
All right, so let's wrap up. What is, do you have a not terrible for this week? Mm. I know that we always, like, we do this every time, but we get confused and scared and we don't know what to say.
I know, but every time I go first, I take yours, so
that's
you
true.
Should go first.
Okay,
time.
So I know you're not going to have this one. this is completely random. So as soon as the weather gets cooler for like 5 seconds, I start watching TV again.
Yeah.
And in the summer, I don't really watch TV at all, but, you know, it gets dark sooner, so I'm gonna start with the Netflix again. And I'm currently on a kick of teen romance shows on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. I know you are. Because I came into work when you weren't expecting me to. you were watching some
I was watching
teenage show and crying, and
I was
like, what's going on?
The Kissing Booth. And you need to back up because it is good. So there's a whole segment of grown women that just are on my side for this. So I've been watching The Kissing Booth, To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Oh, I love that.
Last week I watched Sierra Burgess is a Loser, which is really, really good, actually.
Yes, yes.
Did you watch it?
I read about that one because there's some actors that are in both or all three of these movies. And yeah.
Yeah. So I will not just keep talking about this, but the Sierra Burgess. So when we grew up in the 90s, like the teen romance novel was always like, or show was always like, somebody had to change themselves to make someone else love them. Mm-hmm. The Sierra Burgess is a Loser. She's a dork at the beginning and she's a dork at the end. And the cool guy changes instead of her.
Aww.
And like, I want everyone to watch that. It's still cheesy teen romance, but like, the idea that suddenly we are no longer saying a girl has to change herself, but that that some, like, they are fine, a girl is fine the way she is, mm-hmm. and somebody else can figure out that they like her.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I like that shift that we're starting. What about you? What's your not terrible? is it is as life changing as mine?
No. Oh, okay. I'll do a TV one too. There is a new series. And they're 15-minute episodes, and it's on Netflix. It's called Explained. And it literally just takes all kinds of topics and gives you a 15-minute explanation. And, like, Jerry Springer has been the voice of a couple, which is – it took me almost the entire 15-minute episode to realize where I recognize that voice, you know. But we've watched them as a family. I watched one by myself the other day called The Female Orgasm.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and that one was pretty, that was the most risque. But I learned some things. I learned some things about it. But there's one about, like, political correctness. Where did that come from? There's one about astrology. There's one about monogamy. There's, I mean, like, it's just, like, 15, I'll say, like, 15 to 20 minutes. Because The Female Orgasm one was 18 minutes long. It takes a little bit longer to walk people through that. So, but I love
complex.
Them. Like, you can just, it literally, if I have 15 minutes that I was like, oh, okay, I could actually learn something.
Yeah,
here.
Like informative and things you.
Yeah, and entertaining. Mm-hmm. And the way that they have produced it, it's so well done. So, yeah, I think there's probably almost 15, 20 episodes. I keep using those numbers, but I really do think somewhere around there's that many episodes, and they just drop one every week. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this episode is not sponsored by Netflix, but if they want to, give us a call.
We're listening.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye. You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit us at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for our newsletter for bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this one from Jewel1526, who wrote, "The honesty of both Jess and Mary about their personal struggles and their personal joys is refreshing. Every week, the topics are on point for me at this season in my life."
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and the Off the Air podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.